pickled president.
Ursula's husband, pickled president.
Ursula would pickle her husband.
Yeah, that's true.
She would dehydrate him, put him in a jar.
Can she?
Dehydrate him?
Yeah. Like, does Ursula have the capability of consistently going above water?
Salt dehydrates things. You just condense enough salt in something.
That's true.
It makes brine. And you can pickle anything you want.
There you go. Lesson of the day. You can pickle anything you want.
Including husbands. Anyway.
All right. Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, friends and rivals. My name is Jared, and with me is my illuminating friend, Anna.
That was the sound of illumination.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, we will be looking at Disney Lorcana's Illumineer's Quest, Deep Trouble. The artwork and designer were not officially credited on this box. Typically with trading card games, there's a multitude of artists that get to jump in and help. So that's the reason why they're not credited in the rulebook or on the box. And I'm going to guess that, like all things Lorcana, Ryan Miller is the designer of this game. And it is, of course, published by Ravensburg.
Disney Lorcana Illumineer's Quest Deep Trouble is a 1-2 player or more, if you decide to purchase additional player decks, cooperative version of the trading card game Lorcana, where players take on the sea witch Ursula as she attempts to invade and seize control of all Lorcana. Now, whether you use the pre-constructed decks that come in this pack, or if you bring your own deck build to the fight, players will be challenged by the unique deck of Ursula's army. Do you have what it takes to hold her forces at bay and drive her back to the pit of defeat? Or will Lorcana forever be changed as she overwhelms both the players and all the land of Lorcana? Well, we don't really know what's going to happen in your game because we haven't played your hand, but we can share our thoughts after playing this game ourselves. So, with that, let's discuss.
Let's do it. Anna.
Yes, Jared.
What's the first card game you've ever played?
Do you ever play the game Old Maid?
I have.
Yes, I think that might be it. Or Go Fish. I think I liked Go Fish better, though. We had this, like, beginner kids card deck, card game thing that had, like, these four little beginner games.
Yep.
But I only remember Old Maid and Go Fish.
No, that's totally fair. This question backfired on me because I didn't think back that far. But Go Fish definitely makes sense.
Yeah, come on, Jared.
Oof.
After that was definitely War.
Yeah, War might have been my first. As you were saying that, like, I think War was up there in the choices of card game.
So I grew up in a family with eight kids, and in a family with eight kids, things would get lost. And what my parents did is every single time we couldn't find all of the cards for a deck, it would go into the War deck.
Oh.
And so our War deck was in this, like, cookie tin.
Oh my, this sounds like pure
massive.
Chaos.
We could play War all day long and nobody would win. It was a great way to keep eight kids entertained.
What incredible parenting.
What incredible parenting.
All right, let me rephrase, because I don't know that for the sake of this discussion that we care about Go Fish and War.
Old Maid too.
Yeah, I definitely don't care about Old Maid. Did you play any trading card games growing up?
I mean, wasn't everybody's first trading card game Pokemon?
Well, if you're a millennial, yeah.
Oh, whoops. How very generationalist of me.
Oh my. We're off to a roaring start here.
But yes, Pokemon for sure was my first trading card game. Although, to be honest, I mean, I did battle and trade and those kinds of things, but just collecting and hoarding the cards was more fun for me than the battling and trading part.
Okay.
Yeah. So I definitely was more into the hoarding.
Yeah. Pokemon was my first as well. I knew people that played Magic, but it was kind of this different world, and I really liked Pokemon growing up, so it was easier to do that. I did do all of the battling and trading and that sort of thing and stuck with that for a long time before sports kind of distracted me from gaming for a little while. But then I had also a stint with Yu-Gi-Oh! That was fun before that game just kind of went sideways.
Do you remember Digimon?
I do remember Digimon. I don't know if I really got into the card game, but I do remember that very brief stint in the life cycle of things in the 90s.
Digimon felt edgy. It was like the darker version of Pokemon because the cards look scarier. Yu-Gi-Oh! Too. It was like a little bit more edgy than Pokemon, you know?
Yu-Gi-Oh! Was definitely edgy. It was like the goth friend showed up.
That's right.
But no, so Lorcana is the card game of choice that we're introducing our girls to. Faith has done a little bit of Pokemon, but not really too much. But they really like Disney, and so we're kind of trying to see if we can make that a family game here at home. And tonight...
And Faith's definitely in on the hoarding as well.
Absolutely.
She'll get her little folder and just go through her cards and organize them, Pokemon or Lorcana, because she's got a pretty good set of Pokemon and a binder that she's organizing as well. So yeah, it's really... I'm proud to see that hoarding gene passed on to my daughter.
It is genetic, I'm sure. Absolutely. So we're going to discuss today something I was very interested in seeing how it went, because I never saw this in Pokemon, where they created a co-op version of the game where both players could bring their deck to the table and play against a AI-generated deck. Now, I'm used to this because Fantasy Flight Games does this all the time in their living card game model.
Yep.
Where we play Marvel Champions and talks about it all the time. So if you haven't checked out Marvel Champions, we have a review on it. Please go back and check that one.
Or Sentinels would be another
Sentinels
example.
Sentinels of the Multiverse, not from Fantasy Flight, but that is another in that same kind of structure where everyone has a deck and they're playing against the AI deck that kind of runs itself. I was kind of doing some research earlier, and KeyForge did it a couple times. Well, you and I tested out KeyForge, but not really got into the lore of the game.
Yeah, but we did play it a couple times. Mm-hmm.
And like Magic did a one-off every now and then, but it wasn't really like their focus. So I was really interested in what Lorcana did here. Wanted to see how it was going to pan out, because I would love it if that became a more normal feature that came into the cycle.
Yeah, can you imagine teaming up with other Pokemon players and fighting like Team Rocket or other bosses or things like that?
That would have been an incredible design that, I mean, Pokemon could still do. It's still going strong.
They could. They could still do it.
Yeah, they could still do it, because Pokemon will never die.
So mark our advice here, Pokemon.
Yeah, Pokemon. I will say just a caveat, because I'm sure we're going to pull in some people that are deep into Lorcana. I am a very casual Lorcana player. I have not been into trading card games. This is the first one really since high school that I've been really into. So we're kind of dipping our toe back into this world, and probably get a little bit deeper at some point, but it is something that we're more coming at it from the perspective of a board gaming view and kind of incorporating this in. If I speak out of turn or whatever, please forgive my beginner ignorance. So with that said, let's talk about how to play.
All right.
I'll give a very brief overview of Lorcana itself, because we've already reviewed Lorcana as a whole. We kind of talked about the how to play. There's a lot of YouTube videos online. I'll link one or two that talk about how to play, so you can kind of get an idea of that. But I'm just going to go over the structure of how the co-op works. And one more thing to caveat as well, we're only going to review the box itself. So the box is Lorcana, Illuminar's Quest, Deep Trouble. And all you have to do, if you've not played any Lorcana at all, you can buy just this box and you will be able to have a full game where you can play either co-op or competitive, because you have two full decks for each player And then you also have the scenario deck, which is what is used to run Ursula if you were to play cooperative. So the way you set it up, Ursula has essentially a battleground that you play on, and the battleground changes slightly depending on the difficulty that you choose. We have tried it on easy and normal, and we have only played with the pre-constructed decks that came in the box. Easy was very manageable. We were able to kind of work through that. But I will go ahead and tell you, even just here in the how to play, that the difficulty ramps up very quickly depending on what cards flip when.
Like any deck builder, you can build a great deck, and if things flip at the wrong time, they just don't work as well. And same is true of the villain that you're fighting, that if things flip at the wrong time or in a particularly bad luck type of order, it will make the difficulty be almost impossible no matter what level you're playing on.
Yep. But basically on Ursula's turn, she plays a little bit differently than how you would normally play Lorcana. She gets to go ahead and activate her cards that she has out in front of her. And then after she does that, and each card has a priority based on what attributes it has on it, then Ursula flips over a certain number of cards. If she can pay for the card, she doesn't have to exert her lore like normal players do. She just gets to put that card in play. And then if she can't pay for the card, it goes into her inkwell. Once she's played all of her cards, then it's time for the player's turn. The players play simultaneously, but can also work together and can kind of talk out strategy and that sort of thing. And then you just go back and forth until either Ursula has reached 40 lore or both of the players individually have each come to 20 lore. There are actions that you can take on the battleground, depending on, like I said, what difficulty that you choose. And there are effects that are going to be happening every turn, depending on what you flip out from her deck. That is essentially the overview of how her play structure works. Just a very quick, brief overview of your turn. You'll start by drawing your card. You get a new card each turn. You ready everything up. You can use ink, which is the currency, much like land is in Magic or energy is in Pokemon. You spend that to be able to play out characters from your hand. And then you can either challenge opposing characters or you can quest, which gets you the lore that you need. Again, check out the how to play videos if you need to see more of that. But with that, Anna, let's dive in.
Well, hang on. I had one more thing to add. I think it's important to note that the villain takes her turn and then both players go at the same time.
Yes.
So you're not going at separate times, which actually makes it really cool because if you're talking out loud like we didn't necessarily like show each other our hands, be like, all right, how are we going to play this exactly perfectly? Because that kind of felt a little bit cheaty.
Sure.
But we did talk out loud as we were playing, and then I could bring out this, and I'd say, I think I'm going to attack this, and Jared would be like, oh, here, let me play this boost card for you. So as you're playing at the same time, you can really be listening to each other, boosting each other, which made a kind of a cool dynamic.
Yeah, and the decks play very differently.
Very differently.
So for those who are familiar, the one deck that Anna played is the...
It was the red and the yellow.
The Amber Ruby deck. And I had the Amethyst Steel deck. So my deck was much more about control and hitting quickly. And Anna had a variety of things going on with multiple characters on the board at one time. And so I would try to use some of my cards to control the board, letting her hit them strong. And then we could both quest after that. So it does have a nice balance to it as far as, like I said, both of the player decks are fully built. So if you wanted to try it out playing the game against each other, you can do that because it's already built and ready to go. And there is a sizable challenge to the co-op, which is good because an easy co-op is never fun. So, Anna, with that said, before we dive into some of our thoughts, what did you think of the art style for this particular set? Because Ursula's art in particular is a little bit on its own because it's kind of got that dark vibe to it because she's kind of taken the Lorcana magic and kind of reshaped it in her image, if you will.
Yeah, and I'll say even looking at the artwork on her cards, it wasn't only this dark aspect. It was even like an Ursula aspect. Yeah. And so characters that you wouldn't necessarily have thought of maybe underwater are still kind of with waves around them and underneath them and that kind of thing. So I thought that was kind of cool. They didn't just make it be a like evil version, which I mean, that was still kind of cool to have an evil version of different heroes. And so I mean, like, I'd play the good hey hey and then she'd play the dark evil Hey Hey. And it was like comparing the two of them was kind of cool. So I'd say the artwork is definitely realistic enough that all of you Disney nerds will enjoy picking out, oh, hey, I remember that scene from the movie, or hey, I remember that character. There's some fairly obscure characters too that you guys can test out your Disney knowledge on, but they're all portrayed, again, very accurate to the movie in their art. But then the cards have their own art as well around the characters. And just like you're used to in many deck building games, there's different variations of the characters, which is also cool. So, for example, I had a deck that had several different iterations of the character Mulan, and in different parts of her life, there was a wounded Mulan, and there was like a young, just setting out Mulan, and then there was the famed, skilled archer Mulan. And I thought it was really neat how they were able to do different types of art, even for the different, I guess, phases of the same character, which I thought showed they weren't really cutting corners there using similar art for similar characters. They made it unique every single time, which was good.
Yeah, I would agree. I really liked the way that they handled the art for Ursula's deck. It really felt like she was distorting the ink that and kind of fit in with. I mean, the lore is pretty light overall in Lorcana right now, but I do like that she took this ink that was creating all these characters and distorted it in her own image. And now it's got like this purpley evil flare going on with their eyes. And it's got like the tentacles starting to sprout on some of them and that sort of thing. So I think the art's really cool. One in particular that we saw a lot that I really liked was the Triton's Daughter's art. I think just with them like kind of circling around with this, like, we're coming for you kind of thing. I thought that art was really cool. So I really enjoyed that card in particular. Did you have a particular card from her deck that you found to be your favorite?
I thought some of the male characters were cool. So like Prince Eric and Gaston.
Nice, yeah.
Where they've got their muscles, but then their eyes are purpley and they've got tentacles hanging off of them. Especially Gaston looks like he's almost trying to fight against the tentacles, and you can't quite tell if he's, well, you can't quite tell if he's fighting against them or if he's coming at you with them. But yeah, I thought it was neat to see these characters that we know and love and what they might theoretically look like if they got possessed by Ursula. So it was neat.
Okay, so we'll kind of dive into it. What did you think of the co-op aspect versus playing direct PvP, which is what TCGs are typically designed to be?
It was an interesting aspect to it. Again, there were several times that we would play something and then realize that we could have done something better if we had played off of each other a little bit better. So I think as we played more, we would get better at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree.
I also couldn't help but thinking, though, as we were going through the decks, how they would play as a PvP. So for example, as I was playing through my deck, I had many characters that if they quested, they would give their strength to another character. Mm-hmm. And so I could quest half my characters and then boost the attack of all these other characters. And I don't know, I was fighting Ursula, but in the back of my mind, I was thinking, how would I beat this deck if I was playing a PvP?
Yeah.
So it was interesting because that's how you're used to playing these trading card games. And so for me, at least, it was a little bit hard to get out of that mindset, especially since Ursula doesn't play as a normal PvP trading card game person. Like, she's not targeting specifically each character and we're battling it out or using these powers. It's a little bit more streamlined. And I'd say I liked that it was streamlined. I liked that we could sit down and play through it pretty easily. But yeah, but in some aspects, it felt like I was missing that PvP that I enjoy in a trading card game.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, much like a trading card game where everyone knows what they're doing, you can usually get through a game anywhere between 10 and 30 minutes, depending on how the deck falls. But especially with this, where you can kind of, like, she is very streamlined as far as how to do step A, B, C, D, and then her turn's done. Like, there were times where I'm like, I have to be getting a rule wrong, because it just felt so easy to go down the line, get it all done, and then move back to our turn. But I mean, checking everything, it seemed right. So it was very interesting to see how streamlined she was.
It felt like there was a lot of the text on her cards that wouldn't even get used, because one of the rules is that if the characters can quest, they're going to quest, because her sole goal is to get to 40 lore, which meant that there were certain things on the cards that if they weren't being used to attack, you weren't even really using that.
Well, no, because they had, those were when played effects. They weren't ongoing effects.
No, I'm talking about like the
yeah, do you have an example?
Just simply the toughness and strength.
Yeah, I mean, those still come into play when players are challenging them, though, to get them off the board.
Yes, that's true. But it never came into effect the other way where they were challenging us.
That's true. Yeah, it's. I mean, there are certain cards that have that rush aspect, and then that would trump questing. Right. But, I mean, there's not a ton of them. And so I hear what you're saying there of where you... As you were saying it originally, my thought was, yeah, you kind of lose the emotional aspect where the opposing player either is able to stay focused in on their strategy, or they see what you're doing and they start to panic. And so they respond a certain way to what you're doing, which changes the whole dynamic of the game. But in this game, it's like it's just going to go through its same rule set.
It's just
no matter what you're doing.
Its machine. Yes,
exactly. Yes. Even if you started having, like, there was one game where you were 8 or 9 wide on characters.
Yes.
And instead of it doing what it should have done as a player to keep you from winning, it just did its thing. And then you were able to finish it up.
Yes. And so that's, thank you for clarifying a little bit more. So that's kind of what I was saying, where it was missing that aspect of a PvP where you would see, oh, hey, you have this one card that's boosting all these other cards. I'm going to take care of that card first, and then that'll weaken you in this way, that way. It didn't have that strategic attack.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we could still do some slightly strategic things to her.
Yeah.
As we were doing it, but she didn't do any strategic things to us. And then some of her very powerful cards were just like, get rid of every single person on your board.
Yeah.
And we were like, hang on. I don't know. So it was interesting because it missed that. Maybe it is like the tension and the stress of trying to figure out the strategy to beat your opponent. And she wasn't figuring out any strategy.
Right.
So I think I would advise people who really like trading card games to have a different mindset approaching this one, to have it as a mindset you're figuring out a puzzle as opposed to beating an opponent, because you're used to beating an opponent in trading card games a certain way, and that's not how this is going to necessarily play out for you.
Sure, and I would say that can be as much a benefit as it is a detriment, because in some ways, one of the critiques that I'm hearing online when I've been looking at this, and I kind of agree, you can build a certain deck that is optimal to beat Ursula.
Yes.
If you have characters that banish items, that focus on exerting her characters to get them wiped out, I mean, absolutely. Like, you can build that. But in the same way, I mean, to flip the coin, you try to do that in trading card games anyways in PvP because you're trying to find your opponent's weakness.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I mean, I don't really have a problem with it. It is a different perspective for sure.
And that's all I'm saying, is I think you'd want to make sure you had the correct perspective so you can really enjoy the game as you're going in.
Absolutely. All right. What about, so we talked about player interaction some, and we think there's a good amount of player interaction where the two players are working together, but there's no alpha player is because everyone's running their own hand.
Yeah. And really, I think as you get up to the higher levels, you're going to need more player interaction, because it really will be a little bit more like, we're both working together to solve this puzzle. What's the best way to make our hands work together?
Right.
Which we did not play that as much. We kind of played our hands and then every now and then would say, oh, hey, I can help with that. But I think if we were playing much higher than what we got to, we ended up playing to the normal level, I think we'd want to be communicating even more than we did, which is a good thing. I mean, it's a good thing to have something that ramps up in your player interaction as you go up.
Right. I agree. Yeah. But from a, like, if I translated this to a board game co-op, I mean, your interaction is pretty limited. I mean, there's some things that work together, but really you're both playing a deck and trying to, you're doing the same thing, but you're not, because you both have to get 20 lore. And so there'd be time. I remember earlier you were like, hey, so have you like at least hit 10 lore yet? And I was like, no. And
I was already like 16.
Yeah. So you can have one person lag behind depending on how you play it. And so there does become a like balancing factor of like helping each other out to get there. But
I could do more of the attacking so that Jared could do more of the questing and get caught up on lore.
Yep. Yeah. But there's also a individual aspect of at some point you just have to be able to carry your own weight and quest, because otherwise you're not going to get to 20 lore.
Right, because nobody can quest for you.
Exactly.
Even though you can play items that benefit each other sometimes, you're both adding damage to villains as you're playing. You're both adding damage to characters. That was another thing we communicated a lot about, is who was best to take out which characters, and when was it somebody's turn to attack, and when was it and when was it somebody's turn to go quest.
Sure.
And that was important to keep balanced.
Mm-hmm. Not agree. I also liked, and I can't remember how many of these came out in the newer set, but I like teamwork cards, and there was a couple of songs in my deck where we could both sing together, and they would have this like crazy good ability. Like that one time letting you draw 5 cards, I feel like was incredible. And then there was a different game where we could slap 3 damage on multiple creatures and that sort of thing. So I just think that I really like that card type, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, to be honest, I kind of liked singing songs better in this game than I did in regular PvP Lorcana.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it felt like they felt a little bit more accessible because you and I could both tap characters.
Mm, okay.
And so you've got a bigger pool to pull from, and so the songs end up more accessible and more powerful.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I know it feels like it takes such a long time to build up to songs when you're playing regular Lorcana, and the songs felt more fun playing with you.
That's cool. And we were kind of singing the song together. So
that's right. And you had to pick the right characters, and you know, imagine Minnie Mouse singing "Kill the Beast."
Kill the Beast.
Yeah. So it was really entertaining.
Mickey and Minnie singing it together was the best.
Mickey and Minnie singing "Kill the Beast" together. That was our crowning achievement.
So good. All right. So one of the things that really draws me in about this game, and you can tell me if you agree, and I kind of mentioned it earlier, I like that this is a standalone starter pack for new people who want to try to get into the game. It also ramps really well for players who know the game and want to have a challenge. So that's something that I would say is really good about both player interaction, but also if you're a couple or a couple of friends who are wanting to try Lorcana, I feel like this brings enough that it really gives you a great experience and multiple different ways to play the game.
And I think my favorite thing is probably just that it's Disney, honestly.
That was why I chose this. When I found out you could have as many players as you want playing in a game, not this one specific. I mean, you could for this specifically, but just Lorcana in general.
Right.
When I cast this vision to you, I was like, we could have a day in like 3 years where all 5 of us have a Lorcana deck and we sit around the table and play. And that like becomes a thing that we do all the time.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting. And so I will see if it happens, but I also love the Disney theme. I love the different art styles for the characters that they're creating in this game. In one of the new starter packs that just dropped, you have Anna dressed up as a knight, and she's got this big old sword, and it just looks really cool. So they're doing a great job with the art.
Yeah, they really are. And I think, I mean, one of the things that I really like about the fact that it's Disney is that Disney is so widely accessible to people.
Yep.
And so I think it's going to feel like an easier thing to get into. And they ran the gamut with Disney. There was stuff as old as Winnie the Pooh, all the way up to Encanto, which I think is only a couple years old now.
Oh, even like they've got Raya stuff in there already, newer.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Raya's even newer. And I think that, again, I think that makes it feel more accessible because, hey, I know these characters. Hey, I know this story. Hey, I know this is the bad guy and this is the strong guy and that kind of thing. And so our kids are coming at this already invested. I'm coming at it already invested. I feel like I could take this to a friend who would say, Pika, what? If I was to introduce Pokemon to them, and they could feel like, okay, I kind of already feel like I've bought in just because so many people love Disney.
Sure. Absolutely. So with that said, we always talk about price point at some point. So for this box, it's $60. Okay. Typically, if you were to buy one starter deck, which comes with a booster pack as a caveat, it's $17 MSRP. So you're getting two starter decks plus a scenario pack. And I mean, you kind of get tokens, but I mean, truthfully, in every trading card game, tokens and mats and stuff like that, that come in the box are garbage. Like it's
part of the game.
I wasn't even going to complain, but I agree with you, what you said off air, that the fact that you have one lore track and like it actively wants you to keep track of all three people's lore, if you include Ursula, on the one track is garbage.
Completely ridiculous, because the pieces that are supposed to keep track of the lore take up four numbers.
It's true.
And so you can't even see what number anybody else is on if they're next to you. And they're just overlapping each other, and you've got to move somebody else out of the way in order to even be able to move. I don't know who came up with that. Like, if they had just come up with, you know, tiny little squares of paper that were at least the same size as the number, it would have been better than these huge medallions that...
No, medallion is way too much credit.
I'm sorry. These huge cardboard circles.
Cardboard is also too much credit. Like, it's like if paper, regular paper, and the... first grade of cardstock.
Let me feel this here.
And a baby. And that baby fits somewhere in the middle between the first layer of cardstock and paper. That's what this is.
I think it's I think it's a little bit thicker than first layer cardstock.
I don't know, man. This is super thin.
It's super thin, though. And then they put this little hole in the middle, like, oh, you can have it on the number and still see what number you're on. Well, no, you can't if you're right next to anybody else. And since
that's
you're
true,
all going up
overlap,
the same track,
yeah,
it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. We ditched it after one game and used our D20s to keep track of when we got to 20 instead.
And that is very common in trading card games. Anybody who's like into trading card games that's listening is just chuckling, because they're like, yeah, we already do this.
They're like, yes, everybody
they
already knows
this. They throw everything else in the trash, and they're like, whatever, let's just move on. But for the three decks, essentially, how do you feel like $60 hits you?
I mean, did you just say four decks?
Three decks.
Okay, I was going to say, I thought there were three decks. Maybe
yeah,
I misheard you.
Yeah, the scenario deck and then the two-player decks.
Right, sorry, I just thought you said four. Yes, I think for three decks, $60 makes a lot of sense, because it's about $20 per deck. And with Ursula, you're getting a completely unique deck. And even though no more cards are added as you ramp up the difficulty, you could almost play it like a campaign where you try to beat her at the lower level and the higher levels and the this and the that. And so you're buying three decks and a campaign. I think $60 is well worth that.
And you can translate the cards from the player decks and build new decks out of them with your other collection.
Yep.
The scenario deck is, you can't use it outside of the scenario. They use gold backing to differentiate it from the rest of the cards. So you can't like take the cool.
So you can't sneak in a dark Heihei into
your already existing
Lurkana deck.
I mean, I get it, because like Ursula's cheating in the way that she plays. And so she's doing things that you normally can't do in Lurkana. Like she has zero cost stuff that just gets thrown out there, no problem. And things like that. So I get it. It would have been cool to have, like, I remember back in the day when Pokemon had its like dark run and you had like Dark Charizard or Team Rockets, whatever. I always thought it was cool to kind of include those. But no, you can use the other 60 cards. They have several that are like sparkly and have like a weird add
holographic to holographic.
No, but it's not normal holographic shiny. It's got like this weird glittery.
What going for,
it's
though.
Like this glittery shimmer, which I get it. Like they're all shimmers and glimmers and whatever. But I don't know that I like the full glitter effect that some of the cards had. For me, it was a little bit harder to read. But I agree with you overall. $60 is definitely a good price point. I would encourage you. They are kind of hard to find. I got lucky at a Target and found a copy. But if you look online, they're jacking up the prices right now because it's a new box. But check your Targets, check your local game store, and, you know, just kind of be patient, because it will come out and you'll be able to get it from there. All right, so that's price point. We like to talk about traveling and how well it travels.
Yeah.
So I think if you keep up with your lore counts a different way and kind of have a basic understanding of where everything goes on her board so that you don't have to bring along the mat, I think you can play this a lot of different places. You can take it to a restaurant. You can take it to in your bag if you're going on vacation. I mean, it's just three little decks. So you can throw it in a deck box or two and be good to go, in my opinion. You don't even really need to bring... So she has like an oversized card that's her. You don't even really have to bring that.
But it's just pretty. It doesn't do anything.
I mean, there are a couple oversized cards that you do have to bring because they like set the difficulty. But I still don't think it's that much that you couldn't carry it around. So I think it's pretty travelable. Don't think it's going to be able to make a trade table, though.
No, I mean, with any trading card game, you've got to spread out your cards. You've got your active area and your inactive area. And in this case, you also got your ink area.
No, that's a good point. So, your Amber Ruby deck has no chance of making it anywhere small.
No, I can't pull out nine heroes all in a row at the same time on a trade table. What's going on here? But, I mean... It's easy to stick in a deck box and bring somewhere. You'll just need a table where you can spread your cards out and read them and have fun.
Absolutely. And I'm curious, ease of entry, what's your thoughts?
Well, coming from someone who, you know, started from Old Maid and worked my way up.
What a journey.
But really, to be honest, I did do trading card games. I did do Pokemon. I did a little bit of Yu-Gi-Oh, but I was not ever super into them. I feel like the ease of entry is great. I feel like the rules are easy to understand. They're very streamlined. You want to take note of a few things on the card itself, and then you know how to play. I feel like, I mean, so Jared's already teaching Faith this game, our 7-year-old, and she's enjoying it. And I feel like She still needs a little bit of help, but I feel like a kid even as young as 8 could probably pick up this game, read the cards, have somebody explain to him a little bit about the structure of the cards, the difference between like items and characters, etc., and you could go for it.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that 8-year-olds can play this game, no problem. So I'm curious, I'm going to pick one of your friends who I've played a game with.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you what you think their level of entry would be.
Okay.
All right, so the first person that came to mind was Carly. So Carly and I, we've played a couple games.
Okay.
I think Carly's very smart, but I know that Carly does not play a lot of games in general. If you took this over to Carly and was like, Carly, I want to show you something, how hard would it be for Carly to get into it?
I mean, get into it, like want to collect her own deck?
No. Or... I am keeping it still confined. A trading card game in general is like a massive... undertaking.
It is.
At most levels.
It is.
I'm talking limited to just this box.
Gotcha. Okay. I don't think it would take that long for her to get into it because Ursula is so streamlined that you can't do a lot to prevent what she's doing. You're really just reacting to what she does. So as long as you understand what the symbols on the cards mean in your deck, and really there's not very many symbols. I mean, there's the cost, whether it inks or not, the attack, the defense, and then how much they quest for, and then everything else is explained on the cards. Super easy, ease of entry. And I love that even in your player turn, I mean, you have your ready where you draw and you ready all your cards and everything, and then everything else can just be done in whatever order you want,
right.
As many times as you want until you run out of stuff. So again, and I think if you've got a new person that's going to get into the card game, it would be really easy for you to explain it. Or like Jared said, there are so many how to plays that are like 5 minutes long that they could watch and then be ready. So again, really low ease of entry.
While we were setting up for our first game of this, I asked you if you remembered everything about Lorcana and how to play. And it had been so long since you'd played last time that I could throw a 4-minute video in front of you. You're like, oh yeah, okay, we're good.
Well, and again, the 4-minute video was about 30 seconds in and I was like, oh yeah, I remember how to play this.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't even, it's
very
well laid out for explaining what you have to do.
For sure. I completely agree. All right. With that.
I mean, now I have to think of one of your friends. Let's see.
All right.
All right, Jared. One of your friends.
One of my friends.
That is pretty smart.
Yep.
But you don't like play board games with him very often. Would be Derek.
Nice. This is a good pick.
Yeah, it is.
He's very smart.
How do you think that he would react to this game?
I think he'd get into it. So I know that he really likes Disney. And
that's why I picked him, because he likes Disney, but he doesn't play board games.
Well, yes, he will play occasionally, but it's very rare that I've seen him. We don't play that often. But I will say that I think the combination of the love of Disney, he has little kids, and there would be a draw to, oh, I could do this with them. And I agree, it's very easy to set up. And there's something about a co-op makes it easier, because it's almost like you're holding hands as you jump off the cliff instead of doing it by yourself. And
that's right. It would be really intimidating if you're like, hey, here's your deck. Now you're going to battle me.
Now you're going to fight me.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas a co-op mode takes all that away and lets them just learn how to play. And you're like, I will even run the bad guy for you. I will walk through like what they're doing. And that way you can learn along the way. But all you have to worry about is your deck. And yep. I think Derek would be 100% in on that.
There you go. So the moral of this podcast is get all of your Disney loving friends and trick them into learning board games with this game.
That's right.
That's right.
Very good. All right. With that excellent knowledge and wisdom that you've just embarked on all of us, what grade
imparted, I think, maybe was what you were going for.
It's late. I'm sorry. I'm going to stick with embarked.
Oh, no.
It's wrong, but I'm going to stick with it.
What a major...
Opa. That's a joke for you and me.
Oh, no.
All right.
Quick, wrap it up before we lose it.
Well, I need to know your grade there, Anna. What do you grade? Not Lorcana as a whole. That is vast and massive, and we'll save that for another day. But what do you grade this box?
I don't know. I'm debating between an A- and a B+.
Okay.
Just because I think there could have been a little bit more interaction, which would have made it be kind of more fun and interesting. But again, that also would make it more complex. And so I really just like it as it is as well. So there we go. A solid... 92, which in some places is an A and in some places is a B. So we don't even know.
Would you say it's a 92.5 with no rounding?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, good. Also a joke for just you and me. That's interesting. Because I think I would say...
You would also say a 92.5 with no rounding?
No, that's the part I'm going to do differently.
Oh.
I agree with the comments that it's good, it's simple. I think... I split grade here.
Oh,
if you are a new to Lorcana player, you've played some board games, you want to see what this TCG thing is all about.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect for you.
It's an A.
Yeah.
Without a question. If you've played some Lorcana, I'm going to give it like C+, B-. I think that...
Because if you're super into Lorcana, you're going to feel like something's missing.
Yeah.
In the simplicity of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I think from a introduction to the game standpoint, I think it's great for people who are already into Lorcana that build really good decks. This is going to be fine. I don't know how long of a staying power it has. But I think for a new person, like I've been saying the whole time, I think it's great. I think this is perfect for new players into the TCG world. I do hope they make more of these and continue to improve upon it.
Yeah.
Because I think there's the potential to keep this streamlined structure, but also provide the opportunity to add more. And there are more difficulty levels, but I will say too, I didn't want to expand outside of this box for this review. And my understanding is that if you get beyond normal difficulty into the hard and extreme levels, you're going to have a hard time with just the pre-constructed deck that comes in the box.
Which honestly might be a challenge that experienced Lorcana players would like. Because again, like I said at the start, if you change your mindset from I'm trying to figure out my player's weakness to I'm trying to solve the puzzle of Ursula and what's going to work best to beat her, then I think experienced Lorcana players would really like it, but you'd probably want to start at normal or above. You probably wouldn't want to start at the easy level.
Easy was a breeze.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fine. I mean, because for someone who's just learning how to play, you'd want that.
Yeah.
You want to be able to cruise through a little bit and then, yeah. Anyways, you all get what I'm saying. Yeah,
but I think there's a place even for you experienced players if you treat it as a puzzle and you find and build that perfect deck that can beat Ursula every time, even at the highest level.
You know, another thought that I had, and I didn't think about this till just now, and I'm sure people smarter than me have already thought about this, but you can play this one or two player.
Yeah.
So in some ways, this is a great test at how well your deck flows as you're building your decks to kind of get a feel for that. You can play by yourself, and you can play with more players. We didn't really talk about that much. You can go up to 3 and 4 if everyone's got their own deck. I don't know how well the game will scale doing that. I think you'd kind of wipe her out a lot easier with that, but I really think it's structured for one or two, even though Disney and Ravensburger has said with other decks you can play with more players. All right. Well, listeners, friends, rivals, people, thank you so much for listening. Whether you made it a couple seconds in, a couple minutes, or you're still listening to me talk right now, which is wild. Thank you so much. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com. Or find us on BoardGameGeek. You know what? Do all three. I'd love to hear from you.
Wow.
All of those links are in the description. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, if that's your thing, and joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for her cover art and to Anna Snyder, who made the music. Join us next week as Ian and I discuss the animal spirit habitat building game, Harmonies. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
And may you live happily ever after.
Kill the beast!